The farmer preacher William Miller's call to prepare hearts for the coming of the Lord was sweeping across New England at the same time that evangelists in other parts of the world were preaching the doctrine of the Second Advent. In 1838, Charles Fitch of Boston read printed copies of Miller's lectures and was convinced that Jesus would soon come in person to put an end to sin. Fitch, a young congregational minister, rushed to share his new beliefs with his fellow ministers.
That will be enough, Reverend Fitch. We don't want to hear such bizarre ideas.
But there is so much more to say, brother. Why, I find nothing in Brother Miller's writings on which to rest a single doubt. You must understand.
It is a lot of arrant nonsense, Fitch. And if you persist, we will see that you are removed from your post as pastor of Marlborough Chapel.
Stunned, Fitch stopped preaching the Second Advent. He did not want to lose the pastorship of his fashionable church. He struggled for a long time with his conscience and his doubts. Then, on a cold December day in 1841, as he sat alone in his house, he received a visitor.
Brother Fitch, you do not know me, but I have known of you for 4 years, since you first inquired about the message of the Lord's coming. I came to believe it and preach it that same year. I am Josiah Litch of Philadelphia.
You know, it seems to me that you must have been sent to me today.
How do you mean?
I have been so confused, so dissatisfied. I haven't been teaching the Second Coming for the last 3 years. I have submerged myself in the study of sanctification, and I preach on that. But I wonder if that is what I should be doing. And I'm just not sure anymore that I'm preaching effectively.
Brother, you need the truth of the coming of Jesus to put with the message you have been preaching. Return to a study of Daniel. Remember what Father Miller says about the 2300 days of Daniel 8.
So Charles Fitch turned again to his Bible and studied the prophecies of the Second Advent. Again he was convinced, and this time there was no turning back. Giving up his congregation, he began traveling through New England, laboring with Elder Joshua V. Hines and others.
Charles, you're home at last.
And I'm glad of it, my dear. How are the children?
Rambunctious as colts in a pasture. All half dozen of them.
It must be this lovely spring weather.
Charles Fitch's ministry took him far from home much of the time. He traveled by steamboat, stagecoach, horseback, and even Shank's mare. That is, on foot. He lectured on the visions of Daniel and John to anyone who would listen, but it seemed that words alone were not enough to make the meaning clear. Something else was needed.
Brother Hale, I wonder if you would help me on a project I have in mind.
Well, gladly, if it lies in my power, Brother Fitch. What project is that?
I've been thinking that there should be some way to emphasize our sermons,
mm-hmm.
some graphic way to illustrate what the Advent is all about, so that there is no question in anyone's mind what we are saying.
How do you propose to do that?
Well, the words of the prophet Habakkuk come to mind. Write the vision and make it plain upon tables.
Oh.
I propose to do that.
In what way?
What if we were to develop a chart? A chart that would help people to visualize the prophecies of Daniel. Wouldn't that make it easier to preach the message?
A capital idea, Brother Fitch. Let's get started right away.
The 1843 chart, as it was called, was enthusiastically received at the General Conference in Boston in May of 1842. Copies of the chart were used at the June camp meeting in East Kingston, New Hampshire. Here, the poet John Greenleaf Whittier dropped in to visit the meeting for an hour or two. Years afterward, he recalled the eloquence of the preachers and the upturned, earnest faces of the congregation. Camp meetings continued to be held in the United States and Canada throughout the summer and fall of 1842. In October, Elder Fitch was in Salem, Massachusetts.
Elder Himes, the tent is full, and still hundreds of people wait here to get inside. How can we speak to them all?
It is indeed a problem, Elder Fitch. I know. Some of us can set up charts under the trees where small groups can see them.
An excellent solution.
While Elder Fitch labored for the Lord, Satan struck at his family.
Charles, how can I bear it? 4 of our pretty ones all at once. Such sweet, innocent children to be laid in the grave.
I know, my dear. I could not bear it were it not for the sure knowledge that Jesus is coming soon. How I long for his coming.
Elder Fitch decided to travel to the West, as Ohio, Michigan, and Indiana were called, and he set out near the end of 1842. Travel across the country was becoming easier. The shriek of steamboat whistles was heard on the Great Lakes. A great canal connected Lake Erie with the Ohio River and into the interior of the Buckeye State, touching towns that had been inaccessible. Cincinnati, the largest city in the West, boasted 35,000 inhabitants. Cleveland was little more than a rough-hewn village with a population of only 5,000 or 6,000. It was here that Elder Fitch moved his family, and for the next 2 years brought the message to the remote farms and villages of Ohio.
We had great success in Marietta, Brother Galusha.
Mm-hmm.
The folks there seemed eager to accept the message.
Yes, they were very receptive, Elder Fitch. It seems to me that people are more ready to believe the message in this raw territory than those in the more settled cities and towns.
So it seems to me also. And they are more interested in education.
Mm.
Look, for instance, at Oberlin. The curriculum at the college is of the best, yet the faculty and students support themselves on farms and in Cleveland factories.
Ah, yes, we were quite successful there. Many people of the town and college now look for the soon coming of the Lord.
It is not surprising, really. They hate slavery there and routinely assist runaways. And blacks, Indians, and even women are admitted to the college. Their hearts are indeed ready to respond to the call to give all to God.
In Cleveland, Elder Fitch was allowed to use the Congregational Church for his lectures. After a year or so, the growing community of believers built a larger church, in which he continued to do his work.
Mm-hmm. Elder Fitch sure is a powerful speaker, Lorena. Hundreds went forward today to ask for his prayers.
Yes, and he's kind, too, Tobias. I'll never forget when that huge, blubbery man went forward, and he tripped and fell in the aisle. Mm. The whole congregation laughed. It was funny.
I laughed, too. But Elder Fitch just helped him up and said, "Never mind, brother. It's better to stumble into heaven than to walk straight into hell."
Oh, get up there.
There goes another covered wagon, Charles, headed for the Oregon Territory.
We see more of them every day.
I hear that before 1843 is over, thousands of people will have followed the Oregon Trail, looking for a better life.
If I have my way, when they leave Cleveland, they will take with them the news that the best life of all is about to begin.
I don't doubt it.
Later in that year of 1843, Elder Fitch rejoiced to learn that Elder Bates and Brother Gurney had gone south to preach to the slaves. Preaching to African Americans had long been a burden of Elder John W. Lewis. The problem was, most African Americans were slaves in the South, and as he was African American himself, to go South would mean his own enslavement or death. In the summer of 1844, William Miller preached in Cleveland. Although he taught the end of the 2300-day prophecy, as always, his emphasis was more on preparation of hearts than on setting dates. Then, on a chilly day in the fall of 1844, Elder Fitch was conducting a baptism in Lake Erie.
Charles, you've already baptized about 20 souls, and there are at least that many waiting. You should stop for now. Look at you. You're shivering as if with the ague. What will your wife say if I bring you back to her like this?
I must do the Lord's work. Don't worry, my friend. We are almost finished.
After the baptism, Elder Fitch was on his way home with his clothes clammy against his shivering body when he met another group who desired to be baptized. He returned with them to the lakeshore, where he spent long periods in the frigid waves, immersing people one by one. As he started again for home, shivering so that he could hardly walk, a third group met him, also seeking to be buried with Christ in baptism. Again, the 38-year-old minister retraced his steps to the lake and once again went through the watery ritual.
Charles, I agree with your wife. You should have stayed home today. You caught an awful chill with all that baptizing in the lake yesterday. This wind is cold, and there are several miles to go. Turn back, I beg you.
I must keep this appointment. I must do my duty.
Doctor, my husband?
It is more than a cold, Mrs. Fitch. I fear your husband has pneumonia. He's very weak, and his lungs are full of fluid. I'm afraid he's in God's hands now.
He always has been. Charles.
I believe I am dying, my dear. What is the date?
October 14th.
Oh. No matter. Just a few more days, and we'll be together again. I believe in the promises of the Lord.
Mama, why are you so happy when Papa's dead?
I'm not happy. I want my Papa back.
We will have him back, my dears. In just a few days, when Jesus comes, he will wake Papa up, and your sleeping brothers and sisters, too. And we will all be a family, together again. Won't that be the most wonderful thing that has ever happened?
Oh, yes, Mama. I can hardly wait.